in a world of mindless movie cliches. One podcast fights back. Critics are calling it profound, epic, free. Prepare to revisit your video cassette memories of the 1980s and 90s. Behold, it's VHS Rewind.
Listening to VHS Rewind. My name is Mark, and on the line tonight I have David Lawler from the Blissville podcast and blog.
Yo.
And I also have Ben from the Oddity Archive. How are you, Ben?
And I'm all right.
Good. Ben, we were just like saying back and forth, it's very hard to schedule these type of things sometimes, and I don't know why, but every time I would reach out to you, something bad would happen on my end.
And it's not the first time, believe me. I actually had one interview get canceled because of a tornado warning last year, which I thought was strangely appropriate.
Awesome.
And I had just done the episode on weather warnings to boot.
And I remember that episode. There's a lot of... You have a lot of content, obviously. You hear this all the time, I'm sure. Like... Has your channel been kind of something you've wanted to create for a really long time and then you just jumped into it and did it? Or has this been something that you've always kind of created something and it just ended up being the Oddity Archive?
Yeah, it was unplanned. That's really the best way I can put that.
Because, I tend to be a collector / hoarder myself. And not to say you're a hoarder. And...
Oh, I am. Go ahead and call me that. I won't be offended.
I don't like to just label those kind of things with some people, but I tend to get a lot. I tend to collect a lot of stuff. David, you do as well.
Yes.
We're all Laserdisc people. We're all format people.
Yeah.
And it's interesting too because you're in Colorado, correct?
Yes.
So it's a totally different. But at the same time, very much the same market where you can go to like a Salvation Army and you can find, a Laserdisc collection, or you can find some records and, really bring home these kind of things that maybe 20 years ago were untouchable, or at least they were extremely expensive, especially here in New York.
In spurts. I mean, you can't just hop down to the Goodwill and pick out Laserdiscs any old time, but it's a sporadic thing.
Yeah,
I'm sure it's the same out there too.
Yeah, I mean, lately I've been getting a little bit of a string of good luck with vinyl. I've been picking up quite a bit of vinyl, and just different things. Like I collect a lot of audio recording devices, and I just accumulate the stuff. My wife is not too happy about it, but we have a big house, so I can hide. I can find a corner here and a corner there to hide it, and. But basically, I wanted to, just recently you were talking about your video games, which you mentioned you were looking at the different game systems, and you had mentioned that you had looked into a Retron 3.
Yeah, something to that effect. They just called it the Retron at the game store.
Yeah, I mean, I have the Retron 3, not the 5. The 5 is like the new one. It's like the robust and has Bluetooth and everything. But
Mark, can I ask?
Sure.
Because this is something that me and Ben actually have in common a little bit, is that we weren't very big on video games when we were kids. How big on video games were you when you were a kid?
I was big enough up until maybe about the age of 9 or 10, probably 10-ish, And then I just developed other interests. And I guess that's when I ran headfirst into my own limitations with that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time I attempted to play the PlayStation. I'm like, there's too many buttons on here. I hate this thing.
Yeah. I got a PlayStation for Christmas, and I had one game, and I only played one game. And that was the first Grand Theft Auto. And after that, I really lost interest. And even before then, I had like a ColecoVision. Ugh, that really did it dates me. But and I had a friend who had an Atari, but I didn't really get into video games all that much. What about you, Mark?
I've always been into video games. I had a slight hiatus between when the first PlayStation came out. And I'm really just into it. I mean, I have a PS4 now and a PS1, but I also have a 6-year-old son, so
yeah.
He's really into all of that kind of stuff.
Do you have a Nintendo Wii?
Do I?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I've almost every game system. I'm pretty much a junkie when it comes to collecting this stuff. I'm missing very few consoles.
Yeah.
But with you, Ben, like you struck a chord when you said you really like playing these systems on the actual systems. And the Retron is a nice try, but you really can't beat the actual analog device, you know, of taking the Nintendo, like the original NES, shoving the cartridge in there in just the right way, because each system is so unique or uniquely broken. And, yeah. You know, I mean, I remember having to take a guitar pick on my Zelda thing because I would have to leave the system on, otherwise it would erase all of my work, you know, even though it was supposed to save your gameplay. So, you know, I'm really glad to hear you are a purist at heart. You didn't just dive into the Retron world.
Yeah, well, I mean, they had a Retron at the store, and I looked at it, and it just felt really flimsy, and I guess that's just kind of my mentality. It's like, okay, if I can drive my thumb through this thing, I probably will destroy it.
So. Right, yeah.
Now, as for your show, do you shoot on VHS?
I've done it once or twice, but no, generally it's a standard 1080p widescreen thing. Season one was shot on digital 8.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what it looked like. The first few episodes, the first season looked 4:3, and it was kind of murky and looked like old video. And then later on you switched to like a really nice camera, actually.
Sort of. I haven't eliminated the fantastic carpet vision or anything yet.
And, you know, one thing that really kind of is overwhelming to me, because I do a lot of podcasting, but it's audio, and I've always done pro audio. I can mix down and do all this kind of stuff in my sleep at this point, but with video, it's so much more involved. I mean, you know this. But somehow you really get, I mean, how many episodes do you have currently that are actually released? 71, I think?
That's
only
right.
On the Oddity Archive. I'm sure you have other projects. 71 and a half. No, I'm not counting the half episodes. So
yeah, there's the half episodes, but I don't really have a whole lot beyond that. Actually, my background is in audio, so it's been me kind of learning video and basic editing and stuff as I go along, and just kind of going by, does this work, does this not work? It hasn't really been academic. It's just been practical.
Mm-hmm. And what do you edit on? What kind of software?
I'm going to piss a lot of folks off by saying this, but it's kind of my little Frankenstein hybrid of, I use both main computer platforms. I'm a PC and a Mac person.
So am I.
Some things iMovie does better, and some things Windows Movie Maker does better, and so it's just the two basic systems, but me kind of picking and choosing what works better.
I piss everyone off. I use Sony Vegas for most of my video, and people they roll their eyes, but I find that it's so much easier to use than Final Cut Pro X, you know, which is, I think, very quirky.
I am going to shortly be investing in a Sony Vegas system because I want to get the most basic system for my computer, because my computer doesn't have much power, and I want to get something that is not going to be too much of a drain. It's not going to tax my memory or anything like that.
Well, with video, you need a little bit of something.
A little bit. Tax it. I mean, the way we did it before, back a while ago when I was making movies, was we used Adobe Premiere, and that seemed to be able to do everything. It was incredibly powerful. Now, not so much.
Mm-hmm. The other thing, Ben, I wanted to mention, the intro song, David said that that is your music. I didn't catch that in any of the shows that I watched that you had mentioned. Did you compose that?
Yeah, Pavand, which is in most of the episodes.
Mm-hmm.
The first four had the XTC song in it, but ever since then, it's been mostly Pavand, which is I wrote, mm-hmm. I guess you could say, and performed. And it was basically trying to dodge copyright crap.
Well, do you still do music? Are you still working with the band?
I have never had a band outside of the studio. And, really? Yeah, well, what are you going to do? Hey, I'm going to go play a gig and we're not going to get paid and it's going to be all my songs and you're going to do what I tell you. Come on, I won't pay you or anything.
I've been in about 80 bands like that, actually, where I've played in way too many bands.
Yeah, no, I was a heavy metal folk singer by default.
Okay, I was more of the heavy metal glam kid.
So Jethro Tull, then, okay.
Yeah, unintentionally, even.
So you do mention the copyright thing. So what, and I know that you also kind of blurt out Disney whenever you mention it. It gets a little bleeped. What experiences have you had on YouTube that have left you kind of feeling this way about copyright? Because I just got recently burned by something that I thought was ridiculous.
I get burned all the time. I wish I could give you some good advice on that.
Do it. That's it, right?
Yeah, don't do it.
Do not.
I think what it is don't spend, let.
Well, spend thousands don't of let, dollars on your own server.
I would say don't let your show get too popular, because if it does, people take notice and then they, you know, word of mouth and then lawsuits. I mean, we've done a few things on my show and I am just waiting, but nothing's going to happen. I hope nothing's going to happen because not that many people know about it yet.
Yeah. I mean, it seems I took a clip from some kind of quirky 80s hip hop, mom video type of thing. And the woman who is in the video somehow contacted YouTube and had it pulled down. I sent her a letter because they basically put a freeze. You probably know this. They freeze your entire YouTube account for like 3 months or 6 months or whatever it is.
Yeah, I had one of my channels frozen for 30 days over the holidays.
Just 30 days? I mean, it's weird. Like, how come I got so hit? Or I can upload, but it has to be 15 minutes or less. So it's kind of strange. I mean, I can't blame YouTube for wanting to protect themselves and listening to people who own copyright, but it's not as though we're selling this stuff. We're not making money doing this.
It seems like it's more about attitudes than anything else, because YouTube exists to show material, video and audio, that people don't ordinarily get to hear. They get easy access to it by going to YouTube. If you take that stuff down, if you start being militant about it and aggressively pursuing people, you're going to take away all the popularity that a channel like YouTube would have.
Well, here's my take on it. I think, by and large, YouTube actually wants you to upload stuff that their content ID system can detect, because it can get monetized for whoever it is. So I think, by and large, it's kind of an unspoken thing. You know, once in a while you'll get somebody that really means it and you upload it and it's banned immediately. But I think, by and large, I think it's more of a money game.
Had either of you heard this recent story about a fan film that was made based on Mighty Morphin Power Rangers?
No.
There was a film. It was made by actually a professional filmmaker with two actors, Katie Sackhoff and James Vanderbeek, the guy from Dawson's Creek and the chick from Battlestar Galactica. They made a Mighty Morphin Power Rangers fan movie, basically. It was like 15 minutes. It was filled with violence and sexual situations, and it wound up making Mighty Morphin Power Rangers even more popular. They put it on YouTube, but then the creators of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, whoever they are, Saban Productions, I believe, threatened them with cease and desist and lawsuits, told them to take it down, and then the fans got really angry at that, so they were forced to put it back up because it made them even more popular.
That's interesting. No, I never heard of that. Something I would seek out. It was a great
film, by the way. I'm not a fan. I hate Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, but this movie was fantastic.
It's something I would seek out and check out. I had never heard of that. Is that very recent?
It just, I think the film was released about a month and a half ago, maybe 2 months ago, and then it was taken down briefly, and then they brought it back up. They have a Facebook page, too, as well.
Huh, I'm definitely going to look for that. But, you know, Ben, I do have another weird question. This is something that David and I have talked at length about, and that's, I guess, found footage. You know, say you pick up a camcorder, there's a tape in it. You look at the tape, and all of a sudden you find, like, whatever was being filmed earlier. It might have been somebody's dance recital, graduation.
It's happened to me several times.
Right, and do you find it interesting, or is this something that you're like, oh, great, another one of these?
Usually I don't find them so much interesting, but maybe I'm just overly sensitive about it, but I'm kind of like, God, this is somebody's, like, one time I got somebody's kid had just been born, and it was the kid's first picture, first anything, and I'm just going, oh, God, you idiot.
Yeah, you feel kind of responsible now for it, right, a little bit, maybe. I mean,
so,
I don't want to just chuck this stuff.
Yeah, so I don't get rid of any of it or anything. I just sit on it and, you know, maybe in that real naive hope that someday somebody will go, put out a call on the news or something. Who knows?
I bought an adapter, like an 8mm adapter, and inside was a tape of this girl's high school graduation. And it's like them hanging out beforehand and going to dinner afterward, and they're somewhere in Queens. So I'm thinking, like, one of these days, if I just had the time, maybe I could just really watch it and look for little cues and do some investigation and return it. But I just don't have it within me to really go that far.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't want to digitize and throw it out there and, like, you know, violate it.
My personal policy is I don't post that stuff to YouTube.
You know, I do belong to a group. It's one of these torrenting private groups of just found footage, and they have a ridiculous amount of this stuff. It's nauseating how much of this stuff even exists. And I can't find myself. I mean, unless it's all accidental, but if I'm getting rid of, if I get my uncle's house or something like that, and all of his belongings, I'm not just going to throw out a camcorder without making sure that the tape, I don't know, maybe it's just reckless, maybe it's people who just don't care, and
yeah, well, I mean, I've had wedding videos, and I just assume those ended in divorce. I've had 2 or 3 wedding videos now.
That's amazing to me.
You're looking at somebody else's happy memories on videotape. They're not happy anymore. They're not wanting to keep that tape.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. That's
how I try to interpret it when it's something like that.
You know, and I've shot a lot of very strange stuff, so I'm always in the hope that I'll find something very genuinely strange, but everything is very common and very dry. So, unfortunately, I haven't found anything really worth watching.
I've had, some weird enough stuff. I've had a batch of Betamax tapes, and I actually posted a still on the Facebook page. And it apparently belonged to some doctor, some prenatal care doctor, and put ultrasounds on it to show to the parents to be.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then he went and taped over parts of them just for his own personal use. So it was movies off of HBO and stuff. But once the movie was over, you'd be staring at very nice footage, B1 full speed footage of somebody's ultrasound from 1986.
That is painfully hilarious. It's like,
that is amazing. I love that idea too. You're watching an ultrasound, and then suddenly it's like, you know, it's like the HBO movie of the week or something.
No, it's the other way around. It would be the movies first, and then it would be
movie, just, and then ultrasound.
You just reminded me. I went to this. It wasn't really a clean out, but this guy basically put this thing on Craigslist saying, hey, if you want to come down here, we're clearing out this entire space, and there's like 100,000 records and everything. And I went there and I took about 600 records home. But he said, take whatever you want from this huge warehouse. And I found these Betamax tapes. I don't have a working Betamax machine. Otherwise, I'd love to watch it, but it just says Surveillance, Old Tappan, May of 1998. And it's probably just surveillance footage, but you just don't know. So I really, has really got me wanting to fix my Betamax machine. And on to the Betamax machines. What video formats are you working with these days? I know that you worked on a U-Matic that you got working last summer, I believe.
Yeah, I haven't really done any restoration work lately. As far as archive production goes, VHS is always the biggie. I mean, you have the whole series VHS vault, so...
Mm-hmm.
I haven't really done a whole lot in terms of fixing up. I do need to take apart my one of my betas, though, because I had some sticky tapes go through there. I need to take care of that.
Yeah, I have a... It seems as though this stuff really begins gumming up after a while. My 8-track... I have a Sony 8-track recorder, which worked fine. And now everything turned to gelatin inside, practically. All the rollers are just rubber tar. So I really have to open that up and try to see if I can salvage it.
Yeah, and thankfully I haven't had that problem to a machine, but I've had 8-tracks where everything inside's turned to goo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's no way to prevent this stuff. I mean, it's so old. I mean, everything is 30-plus years. And it's just, you know, we hope for the best, I guess.
It's all, it's all mechanical. And then you have like these very, very hot power supplies and these capacitors. So it gets really hot inside those machines.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And invariably, I think a lot of people just chuck them in some off corner in their garage, you know, and they live somewhere where it's really humid and that doesn't help at all.
You know, that was me. Before we bought our house, basically all of my stuff, I have a very large collection of synthesizers and guitars, and those were the things I really packaged nicely. Those are the things I was dedicated to let this stuff not get destroyed by the weather. But the other stuff, I just didn't take as good care. So they sat in, like, you know, storage facilities and these type of things. Now that I have a house, I'm going through it, and I'm really kicking myself for... I mean, I guess I did the best I could. But at the same time, this stuff is very difficult. I had to throw away a Laserdisc player that was just dead inside. It was just completely dead.
Oh.
Well, no, and then I found another Laserdisc player for $35. That was that's incredible.
You told me you threw out your DAT machine, and I wanted to cry when I heard that.
I have another one if you want one that needs to be repaired. Ben, you want it? I'll send it over to you.
I'll find somewhere to put it.
I do have a lot of equipment.
I'll only trip over it every other day.
I have a lot of equipment that I do need to get rid of because I've tried to fix it, and I just think it's time to leave. I don't have any DAT tapes anymore. I do have a lot of 4-track tapes. Now, with your 4-track, did you find anything that you really forgot about, and then you kind of uncovered some old music that you were really happy to have found, or...
Not really. I've still got everything I ever recorded on 4-track, and it's labeled, and it's living in a area where it shouldn't get humid or anything or deal with any extreme temperatures. But I've never had an aha moment with any of that stuff ever.
That's, you know, when I was watching one of your episodes, you had uncovered one of your old, what was it, like a Tascam 4-track recorder?
Yeah.
And you were demonstrating it, and you popped in one of your tapes, and you were fiddling with the tracks and the volume control on them. And I really thought that music was pretty damn good, Ben.
Thanks. That was one of my better efforts way back in high school. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little after, I don't remember.
Yeah, I remember it sounding better. I'll say that much. I'd say, well, is it playing at the right speed? This sounds really awful for me, you know. And so I was really let down by my memories. I thought my performance was a lot better. But
yeah.
Out of all of your episodes, which ones are like the highest rated? Do you kind of keep track of that, or
what you mean, like the most viewed?
I guess most viewed, or which
one? As opposed to what I think my greatest hits are?
tell us what was the most popular with other people.
Which one do you get emails about, and which one do people, you know, kind of go apeshit about?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I get emails about it or anything, but the Max Headroom incident's always been far and away the most viewed one, which I have very mixed feelings about, because, you know, it was my first time out, and I didn't really quite know what I was doing, didn't quite know where I wanted to take the format yet, or even if I wanted to go with it yet. It's the one that everybody seems to keep going to, and it also takes the most crap, unsurprisingly.
Mostly from you, because you've corrected yourself like 3 times now.
And if you go and look at, just scroll through the comments, it's definite troll bait, which doesn't surprise me given the topic.
I don't know. I think you did a nice summary of exactly what the situation was. I remember that was one of the first ones I watched, and the thing I like about your channel, your shows are very digestible. I feel as though I went through a period where I couldn't believe you had so much at this at some time. I think the first one I saw was the Cube Interactive TV, which I couldn't believe somebody actually remembered. And all of a sudden you have these clips from it, and it really just blew my mind that I'm actually watching this. And then I started digging into your channel, and I think the Max Headroom one I watched a few in, and I was just... I knew about it, but you really summed it up, and I don't know. I think you did a great job. I think you're a little hard on yourself.
I got crazy addicted to the show after Mark introduced me to it. I was just watching it. I just had it on, and I was watching it, and I'm watching every single episode. I go back and I rewatch certain episodes because they're just fantastic to me.
Yeah, I've heard that. Some people just tend to binge watch Archive, which I think is kind of funny because I personally think it's a lot to digest in more than an episode at a shot. But it works for somebody, and I'm glad to hear it.
Well, I have another podcast called On the Odd, which is more of a paranormal and those type of things. And you had the UVB 76 topic. And we had covered that, and actually I mentioned your channel on that episode. I think maybe 11 people listened to my show at the time. Thankfully, more people listen to it now. And your summary is really, really spot on. And there's something about the UVB 76 that to this day, I just think is very creepy. It's very fun to listen to that kind of stuff. And I don't know, you touch upon things that I think that are rare, and I really wish that it would... I don't know. I wish you could take the channel and do something more with it. Because I do think that you have topics and you have content that is strong enough for a larger audience.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I always get, it seems like maybe once a week, I'll get somebody who thinks they know how to make Archive better than I do. And they give me all these suggestions and stuff. And sometimes they make sense, but I've been making it for so long that I kind of feel like I know it, and I know that it's rather uncommercial, but it's just what makes it work. I mean, yeah, ideally Archive would only be maybe 8 minutes a pop or something, you know, something more viral video friendly, but just about anything I discuss, you just can't bash it out that quickly and do it any justice. So it's kind of my own little dilemma that I've never quite figured out. And I really don't want to be that jerk that makes every episode a 3-parter or something just so we can keep the runtime down or, you know, something like that.
Well, I do that a lot on my show because we just go on and I want to keep it under half an hour. So sometimes, like, you know, we had that thing about the action figures. I had to break it up into 2 parts because my friend had brought so many action figures, so we had to do that. Yeah. So it's unavoidable for me anyway, because I can't just shut the hell up, you know?
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm just saying I'm very critical of myself, so I like to keep it a little bit streamlined. But I think that you're being a little bit hard on yourself. You had mentioned in the most recent episode how you felt as though the previous episode was way too long, and you're saying 46 minutes. And then I watch your shows in reverse. So I was then watching, and I'm like, I don't know, just a half hour just flew by, I guess. And I think the beauty of all of this is you know, you're kind of making it all go along. There's really no time constraint, and it's not like you're one of these idiots who are doing 3-hour episodes.
Yeah. I don't see those a whole lot. But
they exist. They totally exist.
I'm not surprised. There are films.
Oh, my. There's one. I'm not even going to mention them because they're friends of mine. They literally do 3.5-hour episodes about film and TV shows that I have no idea who the hell's listening to this. It's like a 300 megabyte file to download. It's ridiculous.
Maybe nobody's listening. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm listening like an idiot, and probably the three people that listen to my show are listening. But
personally, the length thing, you know, I've had episodes where I've really considered it splitting it in half, but when I try and do it, I realize just how much one half hangs on the other, and I just can't bring myself to break it up. So, like the most recent Laser Karaoke episode from last summer, that's 50-odd minutes, and I was going to split it, but when I went to do it, I realized that one doesn't make sense without the other. And it just doesn't flow, so you just kind of have to live with it.
Yeah, you want to keep it linear, you want to keep the flow. So what is next? What's next for Oddity Archive?
A lot of me freaking out trying to figure out what to do next.
And are you ever going to show your face on Oddity Archive? I know you get asked that all the time.
I do. I don't intend to. For a few reasons. One, where would you go from there? And, I've had people say, well, when you do that final episode, whenever that may be, you ought to end it by showing your face. You know, like the last episode of Howdy Doody, Clarabelle talked, or the last episode of Newhart, where Larry, Daryl, and Daryl all talked.
Right.
You know, that sort of thing. But I'm going, well, what if I want to bring it back at some point?
Yeah.
So
I can guess if I can, like, all you have to do is answer one question, and I know what you look like. Do you have a beard or not?
No.
You don't? Okay, I know what you look like now.
Well, I do have a beard if I've been editing for several days on end and just didn't bother to shave. But
you don't regularly wear a beard.
No.
So I know exactly what you look like now. You look like... God. Let me see.
David is actually blind.
I can feel faces.
Yes.
I don't have to see them.
He's actually sculpting you right now out of clay.
And just like in the Lionel Richie video.
Yeah, that is one of the worst sculptures I've ever seen in my
life. That is so weird that you say that, because I was testing my mic before we went on, and my wife picks up the mic and starts singing, "Hello, is it me you're looking for?" So
many songs have been forever warped in my mind thanks to Archive.
So what is the next, obsession? Is there a next obsession? Like, is there something you're working on where you're like, you know, this is going to be something that you're very interested in? Do you have a project coming up for the summer?
Not yet.
All right.
I'd like to know a little bit more about satellite or pay TV pornography. That's what I want to know more about.
Well, if you find the footage and stuff.
Because that American Ecstasy episode that you ran was just one big tease. Nothing happened.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I knew I wasn't really going to get away with showing much of any porno. And plus, you know, I found, just snooping around YouTube and wherever else, finding the ads for American Ecstasy. But, of course, nobody was posting any of the movies they showed. So
that is so unfortunate.
It's not even accurate time-wise. Some of that footage is from completely different time periods.
But I have to say, one of my favorite episodes that I keep going back to and watching, it's a relatively short episode, actually, and I wanted more, and that's really how you do it. You make an episode where people want more instead of turn it off, you know. But it was about early pay TV services.
Okay.
What was it? OnStar?
OnTV and Spectrum.
Yeah.
Select TV. Yeah, well, I mean, that episode really is kind of maxed out. That was the entire kettle. That was everything that I could find on it at the time. And, of course, people have come to me saying, oh, but you forgot about this and this and this, which is all well and good, but it's like, do you have so much as a picture of it? Do you have proof of its existence?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You can remember it all you want.
you didn't even have some pictures were just not available of some of this stuff. I did have a question though about that. Why do you think Chicago was so dead set against satellite, pay TV, and cable? What do you think was going on there?
Well, as somebody who lived there for a little while as a little kid and hearing my parents talk about it, it sounds like it was pure politics.
So you were looking at like what politicians trying to get in on this, trying to make money and trying to regulate it.
Yeah,
right?
The way it sounds like to me is they didn't want anything to do with it unless they could figure out a way to take a cut. I could be totally wrong about this, but I just had somebody ask me over the weekend, do I really think Chicago is where certain technologies go to die?
And right. Yeah.
I said, no, absolutely not. They were one of the first cities to have a TV station at all. Mm-hmm. And they were known early adopters of VCRs and stuff. So to me, it makes sense that they would get some of the things like Telefirst, and as weird as those inventions were, it makes sense because they were kind of the sort that would go on to something like that first.
Right. Philadelphia was like that. I lived in Philadelphia for a part of my childhood, and there was a whole section of Philadelphia that was not permitted to have cable TV. Only one section over Broad Street and up to Northeast Philadelphia had cable. The rest of us did not. And a lot of that had to do with this kind of political maneuvering that was going on, this kind of regulatory stuff. Kind of stuff that we're seeing now.
Well, on Long Island, we've always had Cablevision, you know, like they're pretty ubiquitous. Now we have the choice of Fios as well. But I had friends who lived a few miles away in Queens, and in Queens, you really had everything. It was very strange the way it was set up. But they had WHT. I don't know if you guys know Warner Home Theater.
I've heard of Warner Home Theater.
It was another pay service. And I can't find any evidence that it exists. And it's another thing, like you said, well, where's the screenshot? Where's the booklet? A bill? Where's anything? People do remember it, but I have no evidence that it even exists.
Yeah. Right. I mean, there's episodes that I would do one on in a heartbeat if the footage were there.
And what would that be?
More of those pay TV things.
Oh, okay. I thought you had a
early cable or the Warner Home Theater you were just talking about, certain forms of pay-per-view. Yeah, that stuff I would gladly do.
Yeah, and you know, also in Queens and Long Island, we had, for whatever reason, UHF was really big. Like Channel 68, we had like a hip-hop station. And it would actually rival the early days of MTV, except it was free. So.
It's so weird now that, you know, like these things that were ubiquitous in the past, VHF and UHF, it's all completely irrelevant now. It's all obsolete. We don't do this anymore. We got 5,000 channels on this cable box over here. It's just.
Right. And then you have Roku and it's just boom.
Oh, yeah. And all that, too. Right. Yeah.
All right. Well, Ben, I want to thank you very much for taking the time and doing this.
Oh, wait. I had one more question.
Sorry.
I'm sorry.
Fire away.
I wanted to get your opinion of this. I've asked a lot of people about this. Now, we're seeing a lot more collecting now of these old formats. We're seeing a lot of collecting going on with Laserdiscs, video. People are just holding on to their equipment and their tapes. Are people, are you in particular, do you believe that we are moving past the age of physical media and now everything is going to be streaming, and is this something that Hollywood and television and everything, the entertainment industrial complex, they want people to move away from physical media so there's no more ownership anymore? Now, what do you think?
I, for one, absolutely think that. There's no doubt about it, but I'd love to hear,
because everybody I talk to, they're not investing anymore. And I mean, like half of a group is investing only in streaming entertainment.
Well, you know,
and HBO, throwing everything out.
HBO just announced today in Forbes that they're releasing next month, I guess, an a la carte type of online subscription. So you don't have to have any other subscription. You could just subscribe to HBO just the same as you're subscribing to Netflix.
Right.
So I'm sorry, Ben, I'd love to hear what you have to say about that.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. And me personally, I still like ownership, but I wouldn't be surprised. But having said that, I think if there's a market for it, the powers that be, for the most part, will be kind of forced to hang on to it to some degree. Mm-hmm. And just me personally, like I said, I prefer owning a movie on Blu-ray or, you know, just name your favorite. I kind of agree with you that I wouldn't be surprised if the powers that be would like to move away from that. Maybe not so much for ownership purposes, maybe a bit, but generally I think it's more cost because they don't have to worry about pressing X number of DVDs or something. Yeah.
And if they need to edit it, they can. There's a lot of things there. There's a lot of regulatory situations that could easily be rectified. You know, if there's all of a sudden a song is in a movie, we lost the rights to the song. All right, replace it. You know, you have the whole multi-track system set up. Right. It's kind of like a movies that have the ads in the background with green screen or blue screen, and they're just kind of swapping background images in and out. I don't know if you've ever noticed that, but sometimes, like on television shows, the TVs will show ads for current television shows, and the future is basically going to show that those particular ads will be replaced with current ads. It's hard to, I don't know if I'm explaining that very well, but
what I'm seeing here is that this is only going to give more power and more money to those that are licensing the material, and because of that, I totally lost my train of thought here. Sorry. So
having to do with the formats and everything you're saying. Yeah, I just feel as though it's the end of the physical format. Unless you want to pay the premium. Like Ben said, you have the Blu-ray version. All right, well, this is the best quality version you can have right now until 4K, you know, is really, really widely available. Which, you know, 4K is already becoming slightly affordable. So, you know, it's just another format, and it's all about buying another version of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Because I cannot buy another version of Star Wars, but I will. Right. As a matter of fact, I just bought another version on VHS. I was in a Salvation Army, and I had to buy the trilogy in pan and scan for 75 cents because I just couldn't leave it on the shelf. It was 75 cents.
What do you know what year that was? Was it the CBS Fox one or?
Yeah, it was one of the newer. It was the repackaged one with the foil trilogy. Probably 1999 or something.
Oh,
98. Right. But it was the pen and scan. I don't know why I had to get it, but it was 75 cents. And
yeah. That's again, a good deal.
I hoard. But anyway, yeah. So, Ben, thank you very much for popping on here. We've bored you to tears, I think. And hopefully you keep in touch and we can, you know, speak to you again sometime.
Yeah, that would be great.
Bullshit. Swimming oceans of bullshit. And I'm tired looking for the shore. Bullshit, swimming oceans of bullshit. Just